Welcome to Coastal Cafe. I'm Aaron Barnett, your host today. Coastal Cafe is a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the University of Washington's College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. And today we have a very special guest. We are honored to have on Coastal Cafe the Executive Director of the Western Flyer Foundation, Chris Chase. Welcome to Coastal Cafe, Chris.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to share the story of the Western Flyer with everybody.
Well, we're excited to hear about it. So from what I know, the Western Flyer was a purse seiner. Is it purse seiner? Is that correct?
Yeah, it was purse seiner.
Built some time ago and had an interesting connection with John Steinbeck. So I'm just going to let you start with the history of the boat and or the foundation, and we'll just take it from there.
Yeah, so the Western Flyer is a Northwest boat. It was built in 1937 in Tacoma, Washington, by the Western Boat Company, which kind of has a unique connection to Port Townsend. The Petridge family, Nora Petridge, if any of the listeners are familiar with Nora, it was her family that built the Western Flyer. So it was built, like I said, 1937 in Tacoma, Washington. It was built pretty much specifically for the Monterey fishery. Mid-1930s into the early 1940s, that sardine fishery that was centered out of the Central California coast, Monterey specifically, was booming at that point. So the Pacific Northwest, full of shipwrights and full of wood, was building a lot of boats headed south. So the Western Flyer was built specifically for that fishery. It headed off, arrived in Monterey, California, where it participated in the 38, 39, 40 sardine fishery. Like I said, those were kind of the heights of the fishery. If you look at some charts, there's a particular book called The Western Flyer by Kevin Bailey that would be fun for some of your listeners to check out. But he has a chart in there showing the kind of the apex of that fishery was that late 1930s into the early 1940s, where it completely collapsed after that. But somewhere in its life there in the Monterey, California area, it ran into a man named John Steinbeck. John Steinbeck, as we all know from Grapes of Wrath and Mice and Man and Cannery Row, had just finished Grapes of Wrath. He released that in 1939, had a little bit of money in his pocket, and his best friend in the world was a man named Ed Ricketts. And Ed Ricketts had just completed a novel called Between Pacific Tides. And if some of your listeners are, freshman year biology at the University of Washington, they might have been told to pick up a copy of Between Pacific Tides. It is still a in-print book. It's looking at the near-coastal Sitka, Alaska to the Sea of Cortez. It's a textbook volume. It was published in 1938, I think, was the first edition by Ed Ricketts. Anyway, Ed and John are good friends. They're living in Monterey, California. It's the mid to late 1930s. They both had a little bit of money in their pocket, and they wanted to take a trip. They wanted to get down to the Sea of Cortez, that body of water between Baja Peninsula and mainland Mexico. Ed Ricketts particularly wanted to do kind of a coastal study of that ecosystem. It had been looked at before, but maybe not in the way and in depth the way they wanted to experience it. So they started walking the docks, and I guess actually at the beginning, they wanted to take a truck down there, and they quickly realized that a car wasn't going to get them to where they wanted to go. So they started walking the docks in Monterey in the spring of 1940. And they asked a few different fishermen, hey, you want to go on a trip? And, you know, they got a lot of, what do you want to do? Finally ran across a guy named Tony Berry. And the sardine fishery had ended in the spring of 1940. It was downtime for the fishery. And they chartered the Western Flyer. Tony Berry was a part owner in the boat with the Western Boat Company, hence the name Western Flyer. They included Western in a lot of their boat names, Western Traveler, Western Flyer, Western Voyager. So they chartered the Western Flyer. They left on March 15th, 1940, on what would be a 6.5-week trip to the Sea of Cortez. They went down the outside of obviously mainland United States, down into Mexico, up into the Sea of Cortez with multiple ports of call along the way. They wanted to do a collection. They wanted to kind of take a line in the sand. What did this ecosystem look like in 1940? There were a lot of environmental challenges kind of beating up on that ecosystem. You know, now we look back through the optics of time and we can see that there were environmental changes, but we didn't quite know that. You know, the Hoover Dam had just been built on the Colorado River, so there was no longer a free-flowing source of fresh water to the Northern Gulf. There were a lot of Russian and Japanese shrimpers throughout the Gulf. So there were definitely environmental issues happening, and they wanted to get a look at it. So they did this whopping 6.5 week trip. And I always love that we stretch the trip from 6 to 6.5 to really kind of punch that trip. But they did a 6.5 week trip to the Sea of Cortez. They came back to Monterey, California, and they co-authored a book called The Sea of Cortez. They both kind of went their own way for about, 16, 18 months. John Steinbeck wrote the kind of the humanities, the log, the journey, the story of the trip, while Ed Ricketts wrote the scientific side. He did the catalog, the scientific catalog that went along with it. And they co-published that book on December 6, 1941, the day before Pearl Harbor. So it kind of was overshadowed by a large world event shortly after their trip. But it did get a little bit of publicity from that writing. But it certainly wasn't the grand slam that the next book would be. They both go on their ways. At this point, John Steinbeck leaves Monterey. He moves to Stag Harbor, New York, where he spends the rest of his life, his writing career. He writes a couple of more books that will include Ed Ricketts as a character. We might know Cannery Row. Ed Ricketts is modeled as Doc in Cannery Row and in Sweet Thursday and in the short story, The Snake. So he definitely has a huge imprint on John Steinbeck's life, but they are living separately on separate coasts. And then to kind of give the whole story here, Ed Ricketts has an untimely death. He gets hit by a train in 1948, leaving his place of residence there on Cannery Row, Monterey. He gets hit by a train and he dies several days later. To kind of pay tribute to his best friend in this very moment in John Steinbeck's life, he pulls the book kind of back apart and he publishes a book called The Log from the Sea of Cortez, which is now what we commonly think of as the story of the trip to the Sea of Cortez. So that is quick. I'll let you ask a question, but that's kind of a quick overview of where the Western Flyer plays in history. If you now get a chance to read The Log of the Sea of Cortez, you will see this 77-foot fishing boat built in Tacoma plays a very prominent role as a character in this book as a metaphor for a journey through life and the human connection to the earth. It's pretty interesting. So anyway, I'll slow down on the long-winded answer.
Oh no, it's great. I've met so many people that have read that book and are attached to that boat somehow, at my office in Port Townsend, people said, where's the Western Flyer? I read The Log of the Sea of Cortez when I was in college and it influenced me and went on to do great things and all that. So, okay, let's fast forward from there up to now. And so the boat had kind of the boat returns to Washington State and it just sits in a state of disrepair. Let's start from there.
So the Western Flyer has this blink of an eye relationship with John Steinbeck, and it goes on with its life. It returns to Monterey, continues fishing. It's transiting back and forth between Monterey and Washington State. Again, that fishery in Monterey collapses. It continues to chase species of fish. I mean, it parallels so many of the fishing boats that we all are familiar with. In so much of the fishing industry throughout the Pacific Northwest, it comes to a new fishery, it leaves Monterey, it starts going for ocean perch off the Washington coast. It watches, it participates in the rise and fall of that species. And like all the fish boats, they pull up anchor and they head further into Alaska. And they start chasing out to the red crab fishery in the Aleutian Islands. Once again, it's a rise and fall of a species. Humans are pretty good at figuring out how to catch things. We figure it out. We catch it to extinction dang near, and it moves on. So that's a cycle that's repeated throughout the Flyer's life until the late 1980s and into the early 1990s, when a lot of the fisheries that the Flyer could participate in were now on hard times. It's too short to be one kind of boat. It's too long to be another kind of fisheries boat. If people are familiar with fisheries, there are certain boats are limited to certain kinds of fisheries. It didn't really have a job that could be done. So it found itself on the Swinomish Channel, which is the channel between the mainland and Fidalgo Island. If you've been over the twin bridges into Anacortes, right there by Lacan or Washington, it finds itself tied to the dock. It is on hard times. It doesn't really have a job to do anymore. It's just sitting there tied to the dock. It was chased down by a group out of Monterey, California. They had changed its name at this point. It's now called the Gemini. I should include that in the story. A group out of Monterey found the Western Flyer. They identified that the Gemini had been changed. It was the Western Flyer. They made an effort to purchase the boat. But in that process of trying to purchase the boat, a land developer from Salinas, California said, "I think I want that boat." And he kind of swooped in from underneath him with the money in hand. He purchases the boat. And I kind of tell the story jokingly, but here's the land developer. He writes the check to the fisherman. And many people in Port Townsend will be familiar with what fishermen, we know a lot of fishermen. Fisherman grabs his duffel bag, his personal belongings, his check in his hand, and he walks up to his house, gets in his truck, and drives home. Land developer says, "Oh, I own the Western Flyer now." He gets in his rental car. He goes to SeaTac, flies back to California. And on his watch, literally tied to the dock, the Western Flyer sinks. It's raised to the surface. It's pumped out, raised to the surface. Land developer says, "Oh, my boat's floating again." He gets back in his rental car, goes back to SeaTac, back to California. It sinks again. So
oh, no.
It has two sinkings back-to-back in that Suwannee Channel. At this point, the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, step in, and they tow the boat to Port Townsend, where the local haul-out facility could pull a boat of this size out of the water. The boat gets towed to Port Townsend, where it sits on dry land. It sits on dry land out behind where the now Port Townsend Shipwrights Co-op is located. If people are familiar with the boatyard, Haven Boat Works, the Shipwrights Co-op, it just kind of sits on dry land. And a lot of people, were familiar with it. They saw it sitting out there covered in barnacles, covered in seaweed, just kind of this ghost ship sitting there. And that was 2013. So it sits for a couple of years. And through the imprint bookstore there here in Port Townsend, I think this is, I might be wrong on my story exactly, but the word was let out to the New York Times. A writer of the New York Times writes a book, an article of the New York Times that is essentially literary icon, fate unknown kind of story. It's a short little 400-500-word essay. And that brings my group of people into the project. The gentleman who purchased the boat from the Department of Natural Resources and this land developer had read this article in the New York Times. He had a connection, like you were saying, Aaron. A lot of people have this very deep connection to the Western Flyer and the legacy of Ed Ricketts and the stories that surround it. He had one of those connections. He came up to Port Townsend, saw the boat, purchased the boat, kind of without a lot of direction. He knew that the boat had a meaning to himself, some importance in his life. It definitely was this icon, literary icon, kind of sitting there. He knew it needed to be saved, but he wasn't sure exactly what to do with the boat. And that's kind of where I stepped into the story. And if going in the right direction with these answers, you tell me. But
I will say one thing. If you're joining us, this is KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and I am Aaron Barnett, today's host of Coastal Cafe, and we are speaking with the executive director of the Western Flyer Foundation, Chris Chase. So what happens next after the New York Times article?
Yeah, so this Times article, John Gregg, the gentleman that purchases the boat, some people locally will know his name. He comes up. Again, he has a connection to this story. He purchases the boat. And he was going to take the boat back to Monterey. He owns a boatyard in Moss Landing, which is there by Monterey, California. He'd get the work done down there. The boat needed a few planks, get it fixed up. He pretty quickly heard the sound of corking irons and corking mallets, a unique sound of the Port Townsend boatyard. And he kind of looked around. He's a California man. He looked around and he said, "This is the place. This is the right kind of community. These people have the skills, they have the know-how, they have the materials. This boat needs to be restored here." And that started its next real big chapter in its life. There were a couple of local articles that were bringing attention to the story that this boat had been purchased by this gentleman, that the boat was going to be restored here in Port Townsend. Shortly after he bought the boat in 2015, the spring, I think he purchased it in February, he was kind of looking for that boatyard. He needed a full-service shipyard, someone who could really take control of the project. He talked to quite a few different players in the Port Townsend. There's a lot of talented people in Port Townsend that could definitely tackle a project like this. He settled in on the Port Townsend Shipwrights Co-op, which has been, people are familiar, some of your listeners have been around for, I think they're celebrating their 40th year this year, 1981 mm-hmm. to 2021. Yeah, 40 years in business, pretty spectacular. He settled on that company. At that point in the story, I was a member, part owner of that business, and was kind of in the lead role, shipwright position. I would be swinging a hammer, helping out with the restoration, working every day. And that's where my relationship with the boat started. I shook John's hand, started to formulate some ideas, get a plan going forward, a restoration plan, get some budgets, some estimates going, how will this be done, timeline. And I was starting to fall in love and more with the project. I was diving in, meeting some of the people that are inspired by this story. I read the log. I started to read everything I could get my hands on that was about the Western Flyer. And I just fell in all the way. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I was starting to do some public speaking about the project on the behalf of the newly formed Western Flyer Foundation, which is a nonprofit. And I was shipwriting, and I was also doing public outreach for this foundation. And kind of in a very abrupt moment, I knew I needed a pivotal change in my own life. I reached out to the foundation and we said, yeah, this would be good. We could have a full-time position that could kind of be that, you know, what a director, a newly started foundation's director would do, which is everything you could possibly do. So public outreach, all kinds of stuff, budgeting, fundraising, a little bit of everything, all those hats a newly formed foundation does. So in 2017, I left the Shipwrights Co-op and went directly to work for the Western Flyer Foundation. So that's my role now.
So tell us a little bit about the foundation and the role the boat is going to have in that.
Yeah, so the boat is the embodiment of this story. It's the cornerstone of the story. It's what we can touch, feel, experience. But the foundation is a lot more than that. You know, this story of the Sea of Cortez, their trip with John Steinbeck and Ed Ricketts was a journey of a scientist and an artist. Mm-hmm. And it's the humanities and the science being looked at, you know, and that is the root, the crosshairs of the Western Flyer Foundation, is that intersection of art and science. You really can't have art without science. I think all science kind of starts with an artistic spark. You know, I've said that a scientist will look through a microscope or a telescope and they'll look at a star and they'll say, my God, that's beautiful. And they'll spend the rest of their life trying to explain that. But it all science seems to start with a spark of curiosity. So the foundation is the Western Flyer. It is the Western Flyer Foundation, but really it's about aspiring young people, but all generations, to look at the world with open eyes, to see the world critically, to explore your own world and be inspired like a lot of young people and a lot of people throughout the years have been inspired by the log of the Sea Cortez trip. I think you struck on that a little bit, Aaron, when you said you know a lot of people that have read this book locally that were inspired. I think that was the catalyst that made me quit my job of 30 years as a shipwright. I moved to Port Townsend in the late 80s, went to the Northwest Boat School, was going to be a shipwright, loved boats, loved working on boats. And I turned from that to be so part of this because of the stories I'd heard, people coming to see the boat, telling me they had this pivotal moment in their life. They read the log from the Sea of Cortez, late high school, maybe college. They had major changes in college where they went from being an economics major to being a biology major. It was one of these pivotal stories. And I fell in all the way, you know, all in to figure out the why. What is it about these stories that makes us turn on a heel and change our course direction? And so that you struck on that a little bit. There are a lot of people. You hear that story commonly with the Western Flyer. If you hang out with the Western Flyer Foundation very long, someone will tell you the story about how they read the book and it changed their life. And that's why I'm in it too now. So here we are.
So what's next when this thing hits the water? What happens after that?
Yeah, so the Port Townsend Shipwrights Co-op, you know, it's an incredible team of people. When I left my responsibility as a day-to-day shipwright. Pete Rust, a lot of people locally will know Pete, and Tim Lee, a lot of people locally will know Tim Lee. Tim was at the boat school for 13 years as a chief instructor. Those two guys took over. They are co-leading, co-spearheading the restoration for the Shipwrights Co-op and doing a fantastic job. I mean, the craftsmanship, there are a lot of talented people in this town, and they're able to tap into many, many, many of them, and the craftsmanship, the materials, wood. So restoration is going along really well. When the boat hits the water, COVID did slow us down, like all good things in America and the world slowed us down. We hope to be in the water now. We're looking at late 21 or early 22. The boat will return to Monterey, California. There's always those weather windows transiting up and down the coast. The boat will return to California. And ultimately, we will want to make a trip back up into the Sea of Cortez. A lot of that is to pay thank you to a lot of financial supporters, a lot of emotional supporters for the trip, a lot of people that have seen this from the very beginning would like to kind of revisit some of those original transects that those guys went to in the Sea of Cortez, you know, actually get down in the tide pools and take a look at that. You know, one of the great legacies left behind with the Flyer in its journey in the Sea of Cortez book is that they did give future generations a snapshot of an ecosystem at the beginning, a very clear look at this ecosystem. And we can go back to those exact spots, get down in those exact, intertidal zones and look and see what changes are there. So there's some real science that can be done, but ultimately the boat will be an ambassador for kind of that art and science, that intersection. We'll do some educational outreach. There are a lot of foundations doing K-12 education. That's not really we're not here to reinvent the K-12 education, mm-hmm. but there is a place for the Western Flyer Foundation and it's in the boat and the people that it draws in the educational world. So a lot of that's getting shaped as we go along right now. You know, the big prize has been getting this boat restored. All of our finances, all of our energy has been going towards that. And a lot of that backstory has been simmering, but it's starting to come to a boil that where things will go once the boat hits the water.
Mm-hmm. So I hate to digress, but can I ask you a technical question, Chris?
Love them.
What are you going to repower it with?
That's a good question. A lot of people have asked that recently. You know, when I very first shook John Gregg's hand in the spring of 2015, there were three cornerstones of the project. We were going to have a fully restored 1940s boat. We were going to have a classroom research laboratory in the original fish hold. And we were going to have a hybrid drive system as the propulsion.
Okay.
And we've held on to that for a very long time. But just in the last few months, the reality of changing technology, that industry is evolving so quickly that it makes sense for us to put a more conventional diesel engine in the boat now with mm-hmm. the opportunity for it to learn into the future. So when it hits the water here in Port Towns, it'll have a conventional diesel engine like we know of all fish boats and most yachts. Mm-hmm. With the idea in the next 5 years, as technology keeps changing, I mean, hybrid drive is something that is here. It's here now and will be the future. But for the Western Flyer application, it didn't make a financial reality for us once we really started to measure up against what we would get out of it, our use cycle. We're asking the boat to do an awful lot out of that hybrid drive. So at this point, a long answer there, Aaron, but it is going to be a hybrid, a conventional drive system like most of us know going fish boats. So,
right. Oh, I understand completely.
Yeah.
I'm a former merchant sailor and the direct, the strides are tenfold in the last 20 years and we're going to see some great changes, but sometimes it's just not practical.
Yes.
So what would it take for a guy like me to get a ride on this thing once it's in the water?
Definitely. You know, I get an awful lot of the retired sea captains, fishermen. They're like, hey, I'll drive that boat to California for you.
Sure.
I anticipate there'll be 1,000 plus people at the launching party. It's going to be a hard seat to book on that boat, but
oh, I bet.
there'll be a place for people, you know, getting people out on the water. Like I said, we've always envisioned doing multiple months a year in the Sea of Cortez. I think there's a place for the boat. The boat can do some good down in the Sea of Cortez mm-hmm. with the legacy it's left behind and the people it attracts, the people it brings to the table that want to be part of this story. Science, you know, all up and down the West Coast, from Sitka, Alaska to the Sea of Cortez. Our board of directors is pretty diverse, and I think it's going to do some good stuff going into the future for sure.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's been great to have you on here, Chris. So, Chris, is there anything else you'd like to give a shout out to or point out that we haven't gone over that's important to you?
Since this is going to air here in the spring of 21, you know, for local folks in Port Townsend, you know, everybody wants to get a glimpse of the boat. I do a YouTube channel every 2 or 3 weeks. People can check that out at Western Flyer on YouTube. Just Google mm-hmm. Western Flyer on YouTube. You get a little visual update, a little bit of audio. You know, I interview some of the guys, some different side stories. But as the spring goes into summer, they do roll those big doors open on the end of the shop right across from the Blue Moose Cafe. Due to COVID, you can't go in the building. There are zero visitors in the building, but that is a great glimpse. Just walk up to those doors. They'll have a rope across the door. Don't go in. Don't bug anybody. But you certainly can get a glimpse at something that doesn't happen every day. I mean, this is a big deal. And I encourage people to kind of get down there. Like I said, on these nicer days, they had them open this afternoon. And then if you want to get kind of an inside story, check out that YouTube. I try to get something up there for folks. COVID has been a real, kibosh on getting to see the boat. So,
oh, I bet. So to our audience on the University of Washington campus, if you're up in Port Townsend, stop by the Boat Haven and go look at the Western Flyer.
And the only other thing I'd add on this, since you got a lot of UW listeners, is check out Kevin Bailey's book called The Western Flyer. Kevin Bailey was a UW graduate, a biologist here in the Northwest. He wrote a great book that just kind of, it talks about that apex predator, you know, the cycle of chasing fish nearly to extinction all up and down the West Coast. It's a great read, gives a great story. I encourage people to pick that book up, Kevin Bailey, The Western Flyer.
Oh, fantastic, Chris. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. This is Aaron Barnett, and you've been listening to Coastal Cafe, a joint production of Washington Sea Grant at the UW College of the Environment and KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. Washington Sea Grant helps people in marine life thrive by providing research, technical expertise, and education that support the conservation of our ocean and coastlines. I'd like to thank our program director, Larry Stein, and production engineer, Jared Dufresne. And as always, a special shout out to the band Ku'ich for sharing their music with us at the open and closing of this program. Thank you for listening and have a good day.